Okay, in three, two, one. 170 firefighters are fighting the Hess Creek fire. It's just a little over a mile away from the pipeline. The fire was logged in this morning at 11,852 acres and is about 25 miles south of Pump Station 6. Greg Thayer from the Bureau of Land Management's Interagency Fire Information Center says even if the fire gets closer to the line, it's unlikely it could cause much damage.
If it did burn towards a pipeline, it would burn in, under, and around, but the steel is not going to burn, so the pipeline is fairly well protected. And also the road and the pipeline are kind of a fuel break where fires will burn up to and then slow down because of the no fuel around those areas.
Thayer says by backburning and using explosives to build more fire line, crews have been able to slow the fire. Another fire burning in the area is at Wickersham Dome, now contained at about 250 acres. Others are at Shaw Creek and on Fort Wainwright in what Thayer calls a hot zone. That's where the military target areas are, and they contain armed and discarded bombs. Those fires go unmanned. Ed Edmondson, fire management officer for the Fairbanks area at the Division of Forestry, says besides coming from local fires, much of the smoke in the area is being blown in from large fires in Canada. But there's no threat to air quality yet. Jack Coots is regional air coordinator for the Department of Environmental Conservation. He says air quality warnings are not usually issued until the smoke brings visibility down to 5 miles or less. Reporting for KUAC News, I'm Nellie Moore. In 3, 2, 1. The university and the research section have had a working relationship for about 30 years. As a matter of fact, the section was located at the Duckring Building at UAF. But this spring it was eliminated as a cost-saving measure to the state, and Tuesday an agreement was signed with the university to do the work. Chief of Planning for DOT, John Martin, says the word came down from the commissioner's office in February. He says although the agreement will help the state save some money this year, it will lose in other areas.
We're spending $550,000 less for research and general fund money. At the same time, we're also losing several hundred thousand dollars in grant funds from other sources. So you could perhaps characterize it as savings. You could perhaps characterize it as as significantly less research. And the purpose of the research is to save the department money in by having facilities that are more cost-effective to build and operate. So essentially we're saving money by spending less on that effort. But I believe it's a very short-term savings.
Martin says the elimination of the research section will ultimately save DOT about $250,000 this year. The university will get about $250,000 left over from prior DOT appropriations. Next year, Martin says, the money to fund research will have to come from the legislature in the form of a capital appropriation. The dean of the School of Engineering, Vincent Hahnemann, says UAF hopes to increase the amount of research by going after federal dollars.
We will be able to use this money as matching money to pursue federal money, and so that the amount of research may go back to about $1 million or so a year.
UAF Chancellor Joan Wadlow says she hopes to use the agreement as a model and example for other agencies to follow. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Nellie Moore.
The villages, understandably, are very... saddened or disappointed in this move by the governor, and they're frightened and cautious and wary about the increased traffic that the opening of the rest of the highway would bring with the through traffic and the increased exposure to the general public.
The natural resources that the folks are living on out there right now are scarce, and it's a numbers game. If you increase competition for the resources, there's fewer resources to go around for the folks, and that's the major concern.
In 3, 2, 1. Joan Wadlow says one of her priorities this year will be to keep the faculty and attract more to the campus, even in these difficult economic times. Wadlow says she thinks the UAF faculty is excellent, and she's looking for ways to make their jobs easier. She also wants to increase the number of minorities and women teaching in UAF classrooms. At a press conference Monday, Wadlow said over the next year, she wants to strengthen the academic and graduate degree programs and implement the core curriculum to help college students cope with changes they'll experience during their lifetimes.
When our graduates move into the next century, they're going to change jobs at least 5 times on the average. And they're going to go into jobs that don't exist now, so they have to be able to deal with change. And I think the core curriculum, introducing them to different fields, will do that.
She also wants to tell the UAF story to the community and the state, and she wants to make UAF an international leader in every area of its strengths. Wadlow says although they are expensive, the graduate degree programs and the delivery of college classes to the rural areas are important roles for UAF.
To deliver education statewide to our rural campuses is a very costly endeavor, and it cannot be compared with delivering instruction in a classroom of 50 to 55 students. It just simply costs more, and we want to do a good job, and we intend to do it. So that's more costly. And the other thing is that we offer the only PhD programs in the state, and those are costly. But if we don't, then the cost is even greater to the state of Alaska, because the students, some Alaskans will leave to go elsewhere, and furthermore, the non-Alaskans who come for PhDs here will represent a net loss economically to the state as well as intellectually.
There are two things she says that put UAF in a good position to be a great university. One of them is its commitment to cultural diversity and to serving and involving Native Alaskans, and the other is the way UAF sees its role in the global community. Wadlow arrived in Fairbanks Saturday. Monday was her first day on the job. She replaces Patrick O'Rourke, who served as chancellor for 10 years. Reporting for KUAC News, I'm Nellie Moore. In 3... In 3, 2, 1... True to his word, Fairbanks Mayor Wayne Nelson convened Monday night's meeting of the City Council in Bicentennial Park. Even though the wind threatened to blow papers away and the public address system didn't work well, the skies were blue and people crowded under the gazebo to testify on Ordinance 4986. That's the ordinance which will shorten bar and liquor store hours, but it also says it only becomes law if it's adopted by the Borough Assembly. 7 people testified against the ordinance, like bartender Betty Sunvall, whose statement summed up many of the arguments against the measure.
In the bars, we have controlled drinking. We've got the people in the bar. The police are there. They know where they are. I've been at Club Laskin for 4 years. We've never had to call the police out there. We have no problems. As far as I know, we've never had an accident that's happened when they've left our club, and we are one of the last call bars in town. One of the other things that I don't think anyone's looked at is all the people that are going to be put out of work if they close at 2:00. You have a lot of young mothers, single parents that are working in the bars that have children that are going to be on the welfare rolls, because there's going to be no jobs out there for them when they get thrown out of a job at that time of the morning. We're going to have a lot of problems with after-hours clubs. They don't pay taxes. They don't buy license. We get no revenue from them, but they're going to be springing up all over town.
Others, like Terry Sturl, president of the local chapter of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, came to support the ordinance. And liquor license holder Ruth Burnett told the council it's time to bite the bullet and pass the law.
Once it's over, it'll be just like the rest of the state. People will adjust. I don't think anybody's ever gone thirsty in Fairbanks, Alaska. You know, they really, there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of liquor to drink in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Bob Coghill and Hank Bartos have already introduced the city ordinance at the Borough Assembly, and a public hearing and final vote on the measure are scheduled for Thursday. The City Council passed a similar but more restrictive ordinance last year, but it was thrown out by the courts when the city failed to show that bars and liquor stores within the city limits should be closed earlier because of alcohol-related problems downtown. Mayor Wayne Nelson says by making the law borough-wide, it has a better chance of staying on the books.
Unless it goes borough-wide, it isn't really as fair as it could be, and I think that that they were just simply showing support for it being borough-wide.
Mike Burke owns the Howling Dog Saloon. He says he's devastated by the council's decision and hopes the Borough Assembly will be more receptive to the wishes of bar owners when they consider the ordinance.
Once again, the bars have become the scapegoat for any of the problems that existed in town. The problems with alcoholism and vagrancy aren't necessarily, you know, our problems. I think that one thing that's obviously, you know, pretty evident is that vagrancy problem, people that don't have money in their pockets and stuff, you know, we're the same as any other business. These aren't people that we're catering to.
If the ordinance is adopted by the Borough Assembly Thursday, bars will remain closed from 2 to 10 a.m. on weekdays and from 4 to 10 a.m. on weekends. Liquor stores will be closed from 1 to 10 a.m. on weekdays and from 3 to 10 a.m. on weekends. Reporting for KUAC News, I'm Nellie Moore. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Nellie Moore.
Okay, coming at you in 3, 2, 1. With some schools already over capacity and a steady increase in enrollment, the school district is trying to plan ahead in terms of space needs. One step in that process has been done already by Design Alaska, who presented their work to the board Monday night. Okay, in 3, 2, 1. With some schools already over capacity and a steady increase in enrollment, the school district is trying to plan ahead in terms of space needs. One step in that process has been done already by Design Alaska, who presented their work to the board Tuesday night. They suggest the renovation and expansion of 8 older schools and the construction of new ones to replace North Pole, Denali, and Nordale Elementary Schools. The price tag? Almost $87 million. Add in a long-range capital improvement plan, and that figure is almost doubled. The capital improvement plan, developed from public testimony gathered last spring, includes the 2 proposed new elementary schools, plus converting West Valley High School to a middle school and building 2 new high schools, which brings total construction estimates for the combined plans to almost $170 million. School Board President Andy Warwick says the district now will be going back to the public to find out what they think.
At this point, we're going to have to go back to the public because nowhere in the public comment that I've seen did it ever come out that it was going to cost us $170 million to build these buildings. And that's a tough one to swallow, particularly when we don't know if the state is going to be participating in the funding of them.
Once the board decides what to do, the list will be submitted to the Department of Education in the form of a 6-year capital improvement plan. That plan must be submitted to DOE by this fall. Reporting for KUAC News, I'm Nellie Moore.
Okay, in 3, 2, 1. Up until this year, a small herd of about 3, 2, 1. Up until this year, a small herd of about 25 cattle has roamed the hillside at UAF, coming out in the spring with their newborn calves and wintering in weathered barns on campus. But they're all gone now, except for a few bulls kept inside for instructional purposes. Director of the Agricultural Experiment Station at UAF, Jim Drew, says UAF got rid of the herd last year as a cost-cutting measure that saved about $30,000.
The savings basically stem from the input costs of the feed and other maintenance, veterinary services and so on, that we had to use to maintain the animals. And also, of course, we achieved savings by eliminating some of the hourly assistance that we needed to take care of the animals.
Much of the research associated with the cattle had to do with studying different types of feed produced in Alaska as a base for beef cattle. And that research is now being done at the university farm at Palmer, which Drew says is larger and the research more extensive.
We were faced with the budget reductions. The most logical thing we could do was to cut back the beef research program here and try to maintain the one that we did have at Palmer.
So last fall, the herd was sold, and no one really noticed until the cattle didn't reappear in their pens this spring. Swine research is still going on in Fairbanks, where scientists continue to evaluate the use of different livestock feeds here in Alaska. Reporting for KUAC News, I'm Nellie Moore.
Three, two, one. Gene Hardy turned in his resignation Friday morning. Borough Mayor Juanita Helms says only that he's taken a job in Anchorage. The move leaves the borough without a chief attorney, and Helms says she'll probably appoint someone acting borough attorney until her term in office is up later this year and a new mayor takes over. But contract negotiations with the APEA may take on new life. They've been stalled for the past few months. Helms says she's going to ask the borough assembly for $20,000 to get them started again.
I don't think you can have the borough attorney and have the same person as negotiator. We've gotten an estimate of what it would cost to finish negotiations, assuming everyone wants to finish them. And we're going to the assembly with an appropriating ordinance and going to ask them to give us the money to hire to contract with an outside attorney to finish negotiations.
The mayor says Anchorage attorney Bill Bennett, who was hired by the borough when contract talks started in late 1989, is willing to take on the job again. But the Alaska Public Employees Association isn't so sure Bill Bennett is needed. Borough employee spokeswoman June Pinnell Stevens says things could be wrapped up already if the borough would agree.
We do still have on the table our offer of March 19, which incorporates everything the borough wanted as of last November, with two very minor exceptions. So we're hoping that we'll be able to sit down and settle this contract without having to bring Mr. Bennett back up and cost the taxpayers even more money.
The APEA hasn't been happy negotiating with Hardy and has charged the borough with engaging in unfair labor practices. Pinnell Stevens says if Bill Bennett is hired, though, he's always been very professional and did a good job representing the borough in the past. The borough assembly would have to agree to spend the money before a private attorney is hired to finish the job. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. The governor is considering a reapportionment plan given to him last month. In it, a huge district includes the North Slope borough and much of the interior surrounding Fairbanks. The Northwest Arctic borough shares another district with Nome. But the Tenant of Chiefs Conference supports another plan that resembles one considered by the State Reapportionment Board. It combines the North Slope borough and the Northwest Arctic borough in one district. Another interior district surrounding Fairbanks would go farther south to the Copper River area. Tanana Chiefs officials say it follows cultural and ethnic distinctions between the regions, and they were encouraged by the governor in a Wednesday morning meeting, saying he was definitely interested in their position. During a Wednesday afternoon news conference, Hickel said any reapportionment plan has to take into account the Voting Rights Act and keeping population counts equal in the single-member House districts he wants. He says the Tanana Chiefs proposal has some pluses and minuses.
They have an idea. It does raise problems in other parts of the Arctic. They're bringing Nome in with ADAC, and that splits up other groups, so we'll take a look. And I'll have it finished by 7th September, I think that's the date. And we, of course, every reapportionment has always ended up in court. Everyone has so far.
On another matter that's already been held up by the courts, Hickel responded to the North Slope Borough concerns about opening the Dalton Highway. Borough officials feel it would place a $3 million drain on their budget next year if the highway were opened, but Hickel isn't so sure.
I talked to them about that. I said I didn't quite understand that. They talked about emergency response. That was the big one, I think. And that generally would be handled by or state troopers or something. We'll see how that works out. If there's a cost effect there, we'll soon get to know that. But the Dalton Highway is going to be open. Looks like that'll be about August 15th, but it's going to be open.
The governor says he can't satisfy the North Slope Borough's concerns by August, but says the situation will be no different there than any other state highway. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Even though the state didn't come through with all the funds school district officials wanted, the borough will spend the $23.4 million that officials asked from local residents. Assemblymember Bonnie Williams sponsored the measure, saying the borough was treated kindly in the state budget and that there is enough money in the borough's bank account to handle the additional expense. A dozen people spoke to the Assembly before the vote. Most supported full funding for education and asked the Assembly to approve it. Fairbanks Education Association President Bonnie Barber says funding has been inadequate for the last 5 years, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to keep providing a quality education.
The cuts to the middle school, which increases the class size, the cuts of the elementary reading teachers are going to make it more difficult for the classroom teacher. They've maintained class size, but they've taken away that support. They've taken away some administrative support at the secondary level. And I really think that we need to fund as much as we possibly can. I feel the borough can afford to fund this and should do so.
Even as the Assembly did so, most Assembly members expressed concerns about cuts in the vocational education programs over the years, and the fact that 20 elementary school reading specialists were victims of this year's budget cuts. The school board will decide how to spend the $500,000 more that the Assembly approved. Board President Andy Warwick says they can't restore all those reading specialists, since that would cost about $1 million.
Some of them may be restored in areas that have a higher need for them. The school board hasn't taken a position on what it's going to do with this money. We purposefully delayed any action until after we saw if we got it, so it'd be premature at this point to say where it's going to go.
One thing that the school board or assembly won't have to worry about is a veto. Mayor Juanita Helms opposed the additional expense, saying it should have been appropriated sooner so it could come from the mill levy, not the borough's bank account. But Helms told the assembly before the vote that she wouldn't veto it if it passed, to ensure that politics didn't play a role.
If you think it's going to pass with 6 votes, then you can be number 7 at yes, thinking the mayor's going to veto and won't be overridden because there's not 8 votes to override. So you can be a nice guy and still not have to spend the money, win it all. I thought that the votes on this school district appropriation, which is a very important vote, should be authentic, non-political votes, or if they're political, willing to take the heat for it.
And among the supporters were four of the five assembly members who plan to run for mayor this fall: Bonnie Williams, Hank Bartos, Don Lowell, and Harold Gillum. The fifth candidate, Paul Chismar, was absent. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornson. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornson. 3, 2, 1. Nearly 30 people told the assembly what they thought about the idea of closing bars at 2 a.m. during the week and allowing them to reopen at 10 in the morning. 17 of the people were against it, including bar owners and workers from places like the Howling Dog and Fox, the Botel, and other local bars. Their main complaints are that most of the alcohol-related problems are in the city of Fairbanks, and the rest of them shouldn't have to close down earlier because of drunks there. Jack O'Brien holds a liquor license in downtown Fairbanks.
I don't think 77,000 residents of the North Star Borough on 73,000 square miles of land should be regulated for a problem that exists in a three-block area in the Fairbanks hardcore area.
O'Brien says it's an enforcement problem in the city of Fairbanks that's to blame, not regulations. Opponents of the 2 a.m. closure also say that people who want to drink after the bars close won't go home, but will drink illegally and cause even more problems. The 11 people who testified in support of the ordinance don't see it as downtown's problem. They say alcohol creates problems for the entire community. It's just more noticeable downtown, where tourists complain about drunks on the street, and downtown residents have a hard time sleeping during the summer. Karen Lavery, representing the Fairbanks Downtown Association, asked the council to limit bar hours as part of the solution, prompting Assemblymember Donna Gilbert to ask Lavery what might come next.
Do you really, truly believe that you're going to solve the problem by closing the bars earlier?
I don't believe that there's any one total answer to solve the problem, but I feel that it is a step that we ought to take and examine and see if it can happen. And if you do this by ordinance and it doesn't work, you can turn right around and come back and rescind that ordinance.
Or they could say, well, let's close them earlier, too.
That's right.
Yes.
Representatives of the Fairbanks Development Authority and Mothers Against Drunk Drivers also asked the assembly to support the restrictions. Perry Ann McElroy says it's a way to try to get some control over the problem.
Both of my children were killed by a drunk driver. They were, the driver had been at a bar. He had been served in a bar. He had been served 7 or 8 drinks. He was allowed to leave with a blood alcohol content of 0.155. I imagine that they didn't intend for this to happen, but nevertheless, it's something that they can't control and they can't monitor. And I think that trying to get some control on the alcohol abuse problem is something that needs to be addressed, and it's not going to go away.
But assembly members wouldn't go along. Attempts to amend the ordinance and put the question to a public vote got nowhere, since the new hours would have gone into effect until an election was held. Only 4 assembly members supported the ordinance: the 2 sponsors, Bob Coghill and Hank Bartos, and Bonnie Williams and Hank Hove. 6 others voted down the idea. Paul Chismar and Don Lowell both accused the city of passing the buck to the borough, saying the city can do more to solve its own problems. City Councilmember Jerry Cleworth, who successfully got the ordinance through the council on Monday, still believes it should be effective borough-wide, since limiting bar hours in the city only transfers the problems to the borough.
We just seem to, you know, criticize any attempt at solving a problem we all know exists, and everybody recognizes it, but it's a tough one. If you can figure out a way to stop the DWI incidences from traveling over the boundaries, I'd love to hear it. I sure don't know or have the answer to that, except to make it borough-wide.
But Cleworth says if the city wants to try again with its own ordinance to limit bar hours within the city limits, he'd vote for it. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornson. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornson. Three, two, one. Assemblywoman Donna Gilbert was highly offended last week when the question of a conflict of interest came up when it was time to vote on closing bars earlier. When questioned by the borough attorney, she denied having any ownership in the liquor license held by the Ranch Dinner House.
I have never owned a liquor license or any part of one.
Are you a substantial shareholder in any corporation
Absolutely
that does
not.
Own a liquor license?
Not one piece of stock in a liquor license.
in a corporation that owns
No, sir, not in a corporation. Not one piece of stock, not one penny.
Gilbert's name may not appear on a liquor license, but it is on the application filed with the state's Alcoholic Beverage Control Board several times as the registered agent for the Fairbanks Motel and Investment Corporation, which owns the liquor license, as the secretary treasurer of the corporation, and her signature is on the applicant line. Assemblymember Hank Bartos, who raised the question of Gilbert's possible conflict in the first place, says he still believes she has a conflict, even if she lists her share of ownership as zero.
Yes, it does say zero, but she is a part of the corporation. She is a member of the corporation, and the corporation does own a portion or part of the liquor license.
But Gilbert says she has no conflict, since she has no ownership in the corporation.
I take care of the corporation. I manage it. I am the registered agent. But I do not own any part of it. And I sit as secretary, but it doesn't mean anything. What it meant was that was a position that my father held when he was alive. When he was no longer able to appear at board meetings, he called, he says, can my daughter go in my place? So that's the extent of it.
State statute says a conflict of interest must be declared if an elected official has a substantial financial interest at stake. In the case of closing bars and liquor stores earlier, how substantial an interest Gilbert's role with the corporation isn't clear. The borough attorney did not return phone calls to discuss the matter, but director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, Pat Chirac, says as an officer of the corporation, Gilbert does have direct control over operating the liquor license. But since the issue came up, Gilbert has decided to raise questions of her own, namely about Hank Bartos and presiding officer Hank Hove. Gilbert says Hank Bartos' daughter got a summer job with the borough and suggested that presiding officer Hank Hove might have a conflict of interest if the issue of closing bars earlier is put to a vote, since his television station might benefit by the advertising dollars spent on an election referendum. Hove says that's the same interpretation of a conflict Gilbert is trying to escape.
I'm an officer of the corporation. I do have a stockholder interest, but it is of a very small nature, less than 1%. There's a presumption being made that I could benefit from this issue being on the ballot, and may very well, my corporation may very well benefit from it. But I won't personally benefit from it. My salary will be the same whether it's there or it's not there.
Hope says as the presiding officer, he felt it was his duty to find out if Gilbert had a conflict of interest on liquor issues, but says he's not going to pursue it since the facts aren't clear. Meanwhile, the borough assembly still has an ethics ordinance in the committee process, which addresses the issue of conflicts of interest. It's been postponed three times because assembly members don't like the way it's written. Hove says it will be back on the agenda in August. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton.
Bill was a very special person. He was a businessman and a successful politician. You can't be a successful politician without making friends, so he was friends with everybody on the staff, and consequently everybody on the staff has lost a very good friend, and there's a lot of sorrow, a lot of tears. Now, word is spread to the four corners of Alaska. Bill was as big as the state of Alaska, and he's been in broadcast for 40 years. He's had his show Problem Corner for 30 years. And anybody who's ever turned on a radio in Alaska has probably heard Bill Wally.
Well, I first knew Bill when he was doing radio talk shows here in Juneau, and I was the school superintendent. And then I ended up serving on the assembly with him here in this community, and I knew him as a hard-working assemblyman, very interested in the efficiency, lean and mean. I think he liked to describe budgets in those terms, and he did his best to see that they were lean and mean. Then, of course, I later knew him as an ardent champion of Fairbanks and the interior area, and as recently as a couple of months ago, he was calling, wanting to be sure that the municipal assistance and revenue sharing were treated fairly by the new administration. A fine person. Person that, in my judgment, will be missed, and he made major contributions, I think, here in Juneau and in the interior.
He was kind
coming back rather nicely, or at least that's how it looked and how he sounded, and he felt he was doing real well, and it was definitely a surprise.
I have, you know, the greatest respect for Bill. We had philosophical differences, and I was, you know, very distressed at the time, you know, when I had left the city. I felt like, you know, the city was in such good shape and financially and otherwise, and we had some, you know, certainly some differences, but they were never personal. And Bill worked very hard for this community, and he kept trying to find solutions for, you know, some of the problems. And he always was a good listener. He had had a very late meeting the night before with the council, very, very distressful meeting, as I understand. I guess some people were very unkind to him about his proposed taxes and had, you know, had taken him personally apart and that sort of thing. And he was obviously very, very tired, but he, you know, said he'd lost a lot of weight and he had quit smoking and he had, you know, he'd done a lot of things to try to, you know, improve the situation, but. You know, I'm quite shocked and saddened.
Three, two, one. Bill Wally was co-owner and general manager of Fairbanks radio stations KFAR and KWLF. Advertising manager Hugh Smith says people were having a tough time getting through Wednesday morning.
Bill was a very special person. He was a businessman and a successful politician. You can't be a successful politician without making friends, so he was friends with everybody on the staff, and there's a lot of sorrow, a lot of tears.
Wally is known as much for his years on the radio as he is for his years in politics. He first served on the Fairbanks City Council in the mid-1960s before moving to Juneau and getting elected to the assembly there. That was in the early 1970s, and one of the assembly members who served with him then was Governor Hickel's municipal liaison, Bill Overstreet.
And I knew him as a hard-working assemblyman, very interested in the efficiency, lean and mean. I think he liked to describe budgets in those terms, and he did his best to see that they were lean and mean. A fine person, a person that, in my judgment, will be missed.
Wally was mayor of Fairbanks from 1982 to 1988, and in 1989 was re-elected to the city council. Wally suffered heart problems this spring and was on medication, had lost weight, and had quit smoking. Back in 1986, Ruth Burnett challenged Wally for the mayor's job. Burnett just saw Bill Wally on Tuesday and says he looked stressed and tired at a luncheon meeting they attended. That was just after Monday night's city council meeting, where Wally introduced several tax increases.
He had had a very late meeting the night before with the council, very, very distressful meeting, as I understand. I guess some people were very unkind to him about his proposed taxes and had, you know, had taken him personally apart and that sort of thing. And he was obviously very, very tired. I'm quite shocked and saddened.
Burnett says while she and Wally had philosophical differences, he worked hard for the community and will be missed. Fairbanks Mayor Wayne Nelson has about a month to appoint a successor to Wally's seat on the city council. His job there may be filled soon, but he won't be easily replaced for radio listeners. KFAR advertising manager Hugh Smith says Wally was heard by many over the years.
Bill was as big as the state of Alaska, and he's been in broadcast for 40 years. He's had his show Problem Corner for 30 years, and anybody who's ever turned on a radio in Alaska has probably heard Bill Wally.
Bill Wally was 54 years old. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. Tuesday morning, former Alaska Lieutenant Governor Steve McAlpine spoke to the group. Assigned to talk about voting in the state, he ended up answering questions about the 1990 gubernatorial campaign. Asked if a Cooper-McAlpine ticket may have made for a different campaign, McAlpine says it wouldn't have happened anyway. Shortly before Cooper announced he wouldn't run for governor again, McAlpine says he had already decided he wouldn't share the ticket with him if he did. McAlpine says he felt very differently about the way things were going in Cooper's administration.
It seemed to me like it was a situation where
those disagreements were more and more often, and the commissioners were off sort of doing their own thing, and that there really was no focus, no direction of where we were going.
And after Cooper announced he didn't plan to run again, McAlpine says it was easier to consider a run for governor then. McAlpine also talked to the group about voter turnout and how it can be improved. McAlpine believes many voters have become cynical about politics because of negative campaigns, and the media helps encourage that kind of campaigning.
You don't sell newspapers writing stories about what a wonderful guy Frank Murkowski is. You sell newspapers talking about the fact that Frank voted himself a pay raise. You sell newspapers talking about the fact that he's off on some junket somewhere. Again, that's a healthy questioning of what our public officials are up to. If you didn't question that and they were left to run roughshod over the electorate, as many people believe they already do, I dare say that the latitude would be much broader. But I think that there's a natural tendency on the part of the press to want to focus on the negative side. That's what sells newspapers, and circulation's what sells advertising, and that's really what newspapers are all about.
McAlpine is currently in private practice in Anchorage and doesn't talk much about his political future. He does say, though, that he definitely wouldn't run for Congress. The Taft Seminar has more than 20 teachers enrolled this year. Most are from Alaska. Among the goals is giving teachers a better understanding of American politics so they can help students understand it better. From now through August 10th, the seminar guests will include several politicians, political party leaders, and others with insight in the political process. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. The first international overland expedition to the Arctic Ocean got on its way Monday. Organizer Don Lowell got a permit from the Department of Transportation to take the 20 vehicles up the road to Dead Horse. They gathered at the Carlson Center at about 8 a.m. and got a quick briefing about the dusty and rough trip that lie ahead. The vehicles had CB radios on board, and the travelers were ready to view as much wildlife as possible. Mostly, the motorhomes featured Alaska license plates. One was from Tennessee, another from Missouri. A couple had Florida plates, and Texas was also represented. Charles and Wilma Bennett are visiting from California and decided to go along with the caravan.
We come up here for the past 3 years, and so far we made it to Coldfoot twice. We've never made it all the way, and then we heard about this trip we read about in the paper, and so we decided, hey, let's see if we can go all the way with the motorhome.
The majority of those taking the trip were doing it in RVs, but there was one man on a motorcycle. Richard Bryce of Washington, D.C., perhaps the youngest person going along, quit his job to take a four-month trip across the country and couldn't pass up the opportunity to have company along as he went as far north as possible.
Well, I wanted to drive from the Atlantic to the Arctic and then down to Baja, California. And I was going to leave on Sunday, but my uncle heard of the trip, and so I just waited one more day to drive up with these guys.
The caravan was to stay at Five Mile Camp just north of the Yukon River on Monday night and then go on from there later this morning. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton.